Hello, and welcome to episode 10 of Sea Change, a podcast dedicated to telling the stories of amazing women out there changing the world one idea at a time. I'm your host, Annie Silas, CEO of Silas, a financial services firm that is mission-driven around creating more opportunities for women in our industry and in our community. Today's guest is Maura Cunningham. She's the founder and CEO of a nonprofit called Rock the Street Wall Street that provides financial education to high school-age girls throughout the country. Maura is a fantastic example of something we've seen time and again on this podcast, a woman who saw a big problem and came up with a simple solution. She had the courage to get involved and to get others involved. And what has grown out of that courage is a program that is now in 62 high schools in 34 cities across the US, UK, and Canada, fighting the wealth gap by bringing gender and racial equity to the financial markets. Okay, so welcome, Maura. Thank you so much for being with us today on Sea Change. I am lucky enough to be a part of the Rock the Street program, as are the women at Silas here. It's something near and dear to our hearts, and so I'm so excited to have you to hear about your journey and really to share the story of Rock the Street Wall Street with our listeners. So thank you for joining us.
A pleasure. Thank you. My pleasure. Thank you for this opportunity. Really appreciate it, Annie. And thank you for our support and for all the work you're doing in the local community
and
getting more girls interested in financial health and in the career itself.
So I think it makes sense to start by talking a little bit about your journey and how Rock the Street came to be. But before we do that, maybe just in your own words, could you give just a quick synopsis of what Rock the Street Wall Street is and what it's doing?
Sure. Okay. So Rock the Street Wall Street is a financial and investment, and I want to stress investment, literacy program designed to spark the interest of a diverse population of high school girls into careers of finance, as well as create gender and racial equity in the participation levels in the capital markets.
That's fantastic. And actually just such a critical need in this industry, as you know. So tell us a bit about how it came to be. And I think your career journey and what led to Rock the Street is really important. I think a lot of women out there will find that interesting.
Sure. So I was born and raised in the Bronx. and I very often would turn on Wall Street Week. For those of us in my age group, they'll know that show. And I used to think to myself, wow, they know a lot about a lot of things. And at the time, I was a news hound. So this is probably high school. And I said, I want to do what they're doing. And so I got to college and I majored in economics. And then I went down to Wall Street, quite frankly, because of the show. And I thought, okay, this is where these are my people. So I went down there and literally walked from, you know, shop to shop, as you would say. And I was made two offers, both by Merrill Lynch, and, started with Merrill Lynch. And so I worked there for about 8 to 10 years in the New York City area on the Wall Street, in the Wall Street district. And then I was in the profession for 25 years, loved it, didn't care for the fact that I was always the only producing female very often in my department or in my office, quite frankly. And so I was fortunate enough to retire at a young age. And so I traded options for my own account. But after 3 years of doing that, I said, there's got to be more life than this. So I went back to school and got my master's degree in civic leadership, thinking I would go into public service on this issue of girls and math. My thesis was on girls and math and how we lose them at age 9 in the United States. Some would say as early as age 6. And we don't have that problem in China, Russia, India, nor Eastern European countries. And so clearly this is a cultural issue and not a capability issue. And I'm happy to go into the reasons why this is a cultural issue, but that takes a long time. But it starts very early, starting with mom and dad at home, starting as early as age 2, as to what the young girls are told to be, you know, looking at and studying. But I then said, okay, I need to do something about this. And as I said, there was nothing on this in public policy. So I launched the nonprofit 10 years ago. We're celebrating our 10th year. We're really excited about that. It's quite a milestone. We launched in Nashville, Tennessee, which is where I live now and have the last 20 years. So we launched here in Nashville, Tennessee at one school, and then fast forward to today, we are in 62 high schools across 34 cities in the United States, Canada, and we just launched in the UK this past fall, and we're actually looking at Singapore for either 24-25 school year. We're really excited about those prospects. And then there's interest in over 100 additional cities. So clearly we've hit something here. And clearly it's needed, because what's happening now is 80%, and I'll repeat that, 80% of the teachers self-report that they don't feel competent enough to teach financial literacy, which in my mind's eye is criminal, simply because we use money every day. And to graduate these kids totally unprepared for the debt that they're about to incur in college and elsewhere is just absolutely irresponsible. And the fact that we're not teaching them how the capital markets work and how to build wealth, particularly with women, and particularly women of color, is, again, in my mind's eye, criminal. If you really want them to participate in the, quote, American way of life, unquote, they've got to learn how to build wealth. And so we have been successful beyond our wildest dreams. We just want to be able to continue to scale. We have scaled significantly, even during COVID, we doubled in size. And we are, you know, we can't meet the need. I mean, there's over 100 cities that want us. So clearly, I think the industry needs to get even more behind us, although we have 50 corporate sponsors, 50 plus. But we need more funding to meet this need. And there's a whole, I would say, reservoir of women like you and I who are in the profession who want to get involved in the local communities. So we just need to catalyze them. And so that's what we've been doing, is catalyzing female financial professionals, which are 100% of our instructors, into those classrooms. And we're an academic year-long program. We are not a one-and-done. We don't roll out the carpets and then roll them back up and say, see you next year. We go back year after year, the same schools, and we're an academic year-long program. So it's a meaningful program. It's a rigorous program. And it's well-delivered and well-executed, if I may say, based on our results.
That's fantastic. I think that's a great overview of the program and how it came to be. And there's so much to unpack there in what you just talked about, the statistics, the need, these communities. And I want to get into all of it. I just want to talk a little bit more about the actual Rock the Street, Wall Street model. We talk to a lot of nonprofits on this podcast. We support a lot of nonprofits who all have sort of similar themes about what makes them successful, lasting, scalable. And I see so much of that in Rock the Street. And one of the things that you just mentioned is about having the female professionals really participate and be stakeholders in this program and be the instructors and take ownership, really, of their participation in the program. So let's talk a little bit about the model. Corporations sponsor a curriculum in a school, and they work directly with Rock the Street, Wall Street to identify the school that has the need for the curriculum. Is that right?
Yes. So very often we create the curriculum, so it's a turnkey program in that we then train the volunteers on the curriculum, not that they need much training because they know this like the back of their hand, right? Because financial math, quite frankly, is nothing more than sixth grade math, and we're lifting the veil on that with the girls because they don't know that. In our profession, that's basically all you need. It's true we have our algos and quants, but beyond them, which is maybe 1% of the population in the industry, but beyond that, too, that they can handle their own finances or at least have an educated conversation about them. So, yes. So the way that it works is we partner with a firm to deliver the program in their local high schools. So generally speaking, what we do is they give us a donation. And then in addition to that, they deploy their ERGs, or employee resource groups, or their DEI initiatives. People that are all around that into the local community. So we're a portal for them into the local community. So it's a win-win situation in that oftentimes these ERGs and DEIs are always looking for things to do and they don't know what to do. And they just lament about how bad the corporation is in terms of what they're not getting done on this initiative. So we're a positive, forward-facing, and outward-looking organization that they can count on year after year to deploy their individuals and volunteers into that local community.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's resonated so much at our firm is that hands-on opportunity, because I think you're absolutely right. I think so many female professionals in this industry really do want to do something and in a really hands-on way to change the status quo, to really impart their knowledge, their experience, and Rock the Street Wall Street is such a great facilitator of that opportunity set. Let me ask you this. Do the schools tend to reach out to you saying this is a curriculum that they have demand for? Or is Rock the Street Wall Street going into the schools and really pitching the need for adding this curriculum?
A bit of both. So we pitch it when we have a corporation that or a firm that wants to work within their local community. So we go and we look for schools that are geographically accessible to their volunteers. If that's the case, then we pitch it. However, we measure everything. So we measure what's coming in to us in way of inquiries. And of the 100 cities that are coming in to us, I would say probably 25% of those are schools that want to bring the program to them. And then sometimes we have school systems that want the program. So for instance, we were looking at Houston and Chicago, they were interested in potentially bringing it out to all of the schools there, which would be a massive undertaking. And we would be interested in potentially doing it, but of course we need the funding. And the school systems don't have the funding, so we'd have to get a major corporation and a major donor to give the green light for that. But so it's schools and systems of schools that are interested in the curriculum.
And then once the curriculum is available within the school system and sort of that match has been made with Rock the Street, are you finding that the girls are self-selecting, wanting to be part of this program and wanting to learn? Or is it much more outreach from the teachers and the sponsors within the school of the program to find girls and really bring them in?
Both.
Love it.
So When we go to a school and we pitch, as you might suspect, almost every single one has said yes in the 10-year period. We just had one who said, can't do it right now. And that's hundreds of schools, right? So that we vetted. So often, as we are pitching, as we pitch to the business teacher, math teacher, assistant principals, guidance counselors, as we pitch, they'll already have in mind a couple of girls that they know would be genuinely interested in this, right? So then they'll go to those particular girls. But then we put out, we coach the teachers and the assistant principals on how to, you know, put up posters, put it in the newsletter, put it in the PTA, you know, the PTA, the parent-teacher newsletters too, and so forth. And so that will draw another bunch of girls. So some are those will be self-selecting in. Others got a tap on the shoulder from the teacher saying, hey, I think this is something you might like. But more often than not, we find that a lot of these girls have absolutely no concept whatsoever about what we do for a living because they don't see us, right? The number one reason why girls are not choosing STEM professions, which really am, is they don't see women in those professions. And the second reason is very simple. They don't see their friend cohorts, otherwise their girlfriends, choosing these majors when they get to college. And so we are combating that in every single classroom that we're in. And the reason why I chose high school is because what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. The industry keeps recruiting at the college level and, quite frankly, at the junior and senior college level, right? The reality is we're not in those classes. We have already opted out of math, okay? So we have to go down to the high school grades to go find them and get them and help them understand you can do this because Hollywood has done us no favors in depicting finance as they do. And then we explain to them, look, you know, as I may have mentioned earlier, but you know, this is nothing more than sixth grade math and you can do this. So and if you catch them earlier enough, then you will get them in the classroom. So I, for instance, was the only woman in my business math class among 34 men. Fast forward to Ashley Leftwich, who is my COO. She was at a much bigger university than me, with 40,000 students at the University of Georgia, and a generation younger. She was the only woman in her math class with 40 men. And so this is the silent killer that no one is speaking about as to why there aren't more women in STEM. And we have to tackle the M in STEM to get them to come in. And then you should be recruiting at the high school level, not waiting until they get to college, because you won't find them. You will never, ever broaden the pipeline if you keep doing the same thing.
No, I think you're hitting on something that we at CLOS found to be just a critical problem ourselves for our firm when we wanted to go out and recruit more women and hire more women. It was quite literally like, where are they? You know, we would sort of post the job and think, you know, why aren't they applying? And we had that same journey that you're talking about. We went into colleges and we said, okay, well, we'll put up a booth at the career fair and we'll post the job with career services. Again, no women. Where are they? When we talk to, you know, business school heads, professors, deans, they would identify, women that they knew in their classes that had the skill set and might have interest, but those women were not self-selecting at that point. They had already opted out and didn't think that this right. was for them. And part of the reason that we wanted to get involved with Rock the Street Wall Street was that exact idea that we have to go earlier and younger. And I think so many of the things that we participate in that are really changing the world are these organizations like yours that are catching girls so much younger and letting them know that this is something they can do. And our experience with Rock the Street and the students that we've worked with is absolutely that they don't even consider this a profession that is an option for them or know anything about it. I'm curious, from your perspective, how much of the program is about, you know, pure life skills, financial literacy, the things you need to be successful in life, to be empowered, to control your own destiny, and how much of it is about exposing them to this industry specifically and hoping that you're opening the doors of a finance career for these young women?
So can you repeat the front end of that question again? I'm sorry.
Sure. I'm just trying to understand how much of the program from your perspective is really just about financial literacy skills that someone would need in their life to be successful, to be a homeowner, to take control of their debt. And how much of it is really geared towards being an on-ramp into the financial services as a career?
Both. you're like four for four, perfect question you asked me. I'm being both. So we take each of our missions seriously. We have two missions: financial and investment literacy, and then also a career prep.
Okay.
Right. So we're an educational, and then we're career prep. So we have a track record of a 71% increase in the girls' financial and investment literacy rate, and that's a 3-year weighted average. We're very proud of that number. And then the other way that we measure success is, well, how many girls are choosing to come into the profession? So we can now track our girls through the National Student Clearinghouse, which works with the IRS. So 25% of our students are either majoring in finance economics or related business computational field, or are in the profession. So that 25% is 9 times the national average of females choosing our profession. Because the number of females the percentage of females that are choosing our profession or anything related to our profession is only 2.7%. So we're 9 times that, so 9x. So we're very proud of that figure as well. And that number should go up as we continue to have more girls. We have more girls going through, we have a bulge of girls going through college right now. And so that figure should continue to rise. And we're very proud of that figure. So we're both financial literacy because And so let's talk about how many of our girls re-enroll with us. As you know, Annie, we're a full academic year-long program. So the first part of the fall sessions are where we do the financial and investment literacy. We do the math problems, we do the lexicon, right? And we follow the markets. Then in the spring, we have the girls actively re-enroll with us because we don't want to assume this. They must re-enroll. They must actively re-enroll with us if they want to be mentored in the spring. And it's that act of having them actively re-enroll with us that indicates to us that they want to learn more about the profession. And so we are now back at pre-COVID rates. meaning we were at 70% of our girls who re-upped with us for the spring. We dropped to 50 during COVID, 50%. Now we're back up to 70. It's actually at about 75%, I'm happy to say, so even higher now than pre-COVID, of the girls have re-upped with us to become mentored by our female financial professionals. So we're very, very pleased with that.
Those are amazing statistics. Over the past 10 years, what are things that you've learned and how has the program evolved or changed?
It's changed a lot. Well, when I first launched it, you know, I launched it here in Nashville and had my friends help by coming into the schools with me. And then I went to Memphis was our second city. Chicago was our third city. And then TD Ameritrade got involved in about the second or third year. It had to be the third. I gave myself 3 years of running room when I launched. So in the third year, TD Ameritrade got involved with us. And we had so many women sign up. And initially, it was just the fall program, and that was it. But I had so many TD Ameritrade volunteers sign up that I called Judy Ricketts, who's a member of the founding family of TD Ameritrade and was on my board. She's still on my advisory council. And I said, Judy, I don't know what I'm going to do with all these women. And she's like, well, figure it out. So I said, okay. I'm just going to make it spring, fall and spring program. So we then went to the spring mentorship program just so I could deploy all the women that wanted to volunteer. And that was the biggest iteration ever, you know, where we went full year instead of just the fall. As far as the iteration, we've developed more curriculum. We have four different sets of curriculum so that if a student wants to stay with us for 4 years, and actually some students do, we didn't expect that either, they'll have different sets of curriculum that they can work with regarding the markets and so forth. And then the latest iteration, there are two different things that have happened. We've got an app now, which has really helped us in terms of, number one, communicating with the students because they know all the apps and they're digital citizens. And it has also really alleviated the paperwork, which you might imagine. We have a tsunami of paperwork with underage kids, right? So that's all been digitized, which has been phenomenal. And we're very highly technically motivated. My board tells me that we're a unicorn and that they've never seen a nonprofit that uses technology as effectively as we do. But because we're math people, right? So we love technology. So I'll put a plug in for Salesforce here. We would have never been able to scale to 34 cities and 62 high schools in as short a time as we have if it wasn't for technology. And in 2018, we migrated over to Salesforce. Massive, massive change for us in getting technologically geared up. Massive, because we used to have one system for this, one for that, one for this, one for this. Now it's all in there, which is phenomenal. And then the thing that's working, that we're working on now is the vocational career platform, which you may know about. I launched it, a soft launch of that in 2021, in August of 2021. And it was basically an internship and job portal, what we called the IJP. And it was like, build it and they will come. I was like, whoa, okay. Obviously we've got something here again. So I built it, and it's where we list internship and job opportunities, entry-level job positions. We had over 300 listings within like a month and a half from the industry of internships and entry-level jobs that our kids would have never seen. You know, 73% of our kids are BIPOC, 49.66% are underserved population. So we're democratizing these lucrative internships and lucrative jobs for the underclass that never would have seen these opportunities before. And so we're really excited about the vocational career platform, because as our girls have aged up and are aging up, we're aging up with them. So we know we need this, and that's where we're looking for more funding for that technology. That's the next piece of technology we're looking for.
That's fantastic. It's incredibly impressive what you've accomplished in such a short time, and I'm sure it's just the beginning. Let's go back to some of the things you talked about in the beginning of the podcast, and it was one of the statistics that caught my eye when we first got involved with Rock the Street. It's something I've repeated all the time, but this idea that we lose young girls in the math field at such a young age. And I think it's eye-popping. I think it's something that people are sort of softly aware of, that, you know, at a certain point we lose girls, but to really understand that it's so early on, and that it is cultural and it's not happening in other countries. Can you talk about that and what you see as kind of what's happening there?
Sure. Okay. That could take a whole day to do this, but I'll try to do it in, like, you know, 5 minutes or less. And less is more. So it starts at home. Mom and dad, this is all research, okay, that I did in my master's thesis. So if mom and dad have a boy and a girl, mom and dad will still say to the son, you do math and science, and still say to the daughter, you do French and literature. Still happens, right? So then they get to grade school. At grade school, they meet 90% of their teachers are female, who have little to no certification whatsoever in math. And they have what's called math anxiety. And that math anxiety travels to the class, to the girls in the class, but not the boys in the class. University of Chicago has 12-year longitudinal studies on this. And the teachers will actually say, I hate math. I can't do math. They actually say it. And so the girls begin to think that it's societally acceptable for them to opt out of math. And they've been hearing this since elementary school. Then they get to middle school. Then they think amongst themselves that we can't do math. And then by high school, they say, we can't do math at all, right? And so they're like, we don't need to know math. I mean, I've heard this and I've had to tackle with it and I can give you subcultures in our country where we've actually had to tackle this. Amazing, it's still so prevalent, but it is. So that's why, among many reasons as to why there aren't as many girls in the STEM subjects. Here's another reason. The teachers, quite frankly, and by the way, I love teachers. I have many, many teachers in my family. My husband's a former teacher. Please understand, I love teachers. Love them. I think they deserve a hell of a lot more pay what they're doing than this society attributes to them. So, but here's what happens. As I mentioned, I was the only girl in my math class, as was Ashley Leftwich. Ashley, when she was in high school here in Nashville, Tennessee, there were three girls in her classroom who, in the math class, the female math teacher never called on them, never would call on them. So the three girls said, you know, screw it. We're not going to participate in this anymore because she's not calling on us. Then I've had girls, because I'm a safe person to speak to about their experiences, I've had girls tell me, I want to share some stories with you. And so one young lady was at a school, and in high school, she had scored the highest math. She'd score the highest score on the math exam. The male professor comes over to her and says, don't tell anybody you got the highest grade. He then goes on to announce that the boy in that class had gotten the highest grade. This particular boy is a family member of a well-known nationally, if not international, family. And she was stunned. She was like, wow. I can, you know, she had no idea why that was happening. She had no idea, right? She's a kid. And so from that day forward, she pulled away from math. She never told her parents. She never told anybody, but she pulled away from math. Fast forward 10 years later, same school, science department. Someone's daughter, whom I know, is taking advanced physics. The teacher says to her, why do you want to be here? This is all boys. I mean, actually had the nerve to say that to this young lady. Instead of, wow, this is great that you're here. You know, what can we do to help or whatever? Instead, he's making her feel like alienated. Why are you here? This is a guy's class. I mean, the institutions, the educational institutions just assume that the STEM school studies are just for boys. And the female teachers can be sometimes just as bad as the male teachers in this. And so it's just phenomenal, all of the obstacles that get thrown in the girls' ways in terms of being involved in this.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly depressing when you sort of go over these lengths of time and find that the same things are still happening or that the statistics aren't changing. Does it ever make you feel like being a high school program that you're already sort of late in the process of fixing this? does it make you feel that there's a need for some sort of elementary school type intervention?
Oh, there is. There absolutely is, for sure. I did try this. I launched initially when I was testing it in the middle schools. The challenge was that the girls have absolutely no concept of money. They're middle schoolers. They want to do cupcakes.
Right, you know? Right.
They wanted to open up a cupcake store. Like, I don't think this is going to work. And then you have classroom control with middle school kids, right? That was the other thing. So I knew I was going to have female volunteers coming in who don't know about classroom control, right? At least at the high school level, they're older, they have a concept of money, and they're on the verge of becoming independent. So now they're more interested in money, right? So that's why I bumped it up to the high school level. Now, if I was going to be an advisor to somebody who wants to rectify the situation, absolutely, positively, you need to go down to the kindergarten age and you need to tell these teachers or help instruct these teachers, look, you're making an impression on these girls now, you know, and then you've got to fix this in some form or fashion by doing more STEM, introducing them, making them feel comfortable with it, and be mindful in the classroom, you know, when they get into the grade school levels, you're having a phenomenal impact on these kids' lives. I'm sure they know that, but they're doing it without realizing it, you know? And so, you know, you have to sensitize them as to what they're doing and how they're doing it. And they don't get that. They really don't get it, that they're a role model for them. In fact, in the underserved schools, if you ask, have you done the green curriculum, Annie?
Yeah.
Okay. So as you know, in the green curriculum, they have to tell us what profession the girl is in, Janella.
Yeah.
Right? We don't tell them. They tell us. And more often than not, in the underserved areas, what do you think the two professions they give to Janella are?
Is it something like a nurse? I always got nurse in the classroom whenever I asked anybody what they wanted to be.
Exactly. And what's the second one?
Is it teacher?
Yes.
Yes.
You got it. Right?
That's what they always say when you say, what do you want to be?
Exactly. And that's because that's all they know, right?
It is, because I'll tell you something. In the first year that we were in the schools, I'd say more than half the girls said either nurse or physician's assistant. But then when I said, like, oh, are you interested in medicine? Like, are you okay with blood? Like, you know, do you get squeamish? The answers was like, oh, I don't like all that stuff. And I'd say, well, why do you want to be a nurse? And it's always my cousin's a nurse, my aunt's a nurse, my mom's a physician's assistant. It's just what they saw.
Right, right. And that's exactly what's in the underserved population.
Yeah.
They don't think beyond that.
No, they've never seen finance. And I think, you know, one of the things we didn't mention about Rock the Street, but I think is so key, is the field trip. We bring the girls to our firms to see what it looks like in real time. And I think it was the first time any of them had really been exposed to, you know, what a finance job in an office, we brought them on the trading floor, what that looked like. And I think it was just incredibly eye-opening.
It is. It absolutely is. In fact, we took our kids 1 year to NASDAQ, which to me was like Disney World, you know, the opening bell.
Yeah.
Like the Porsche, and the confetti comes down. They're like, wow. You know, but the teachers that were with us, you know, we had a whole panel discussion and we did a tour and everything. And I said, Maura, you got to understand, this is life-changing for our girls. This is life. They could just kept saying it all day long. Life-changing. These were girls from Queens who had never crossed the river. They would never cross the East River into Manhattan. So here they are, all underserved. Here they are in Times Square at NASDAQ. And they're learning about our profession, and they're learning about how exciting it can be and rewarding it can be. And they've called us back and said, we had funding there, and then the funding stopped. It was a foundation. And they said, look, we want you back. How do we get you back? And I'm like, I got to find a funder. So we're in the process of trying to find a funder. So stay tuned on that. But yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The field trip is definitely a game changer.
So just to circle back, the other piece of it I wanted to ask about is why, in your opinion, is this not an issue in other countries, in India, in China? What are they doing differently?
Because I think the teachers are more female, first of all, so they see us in the profession. They see us in math. They know, like, to be math astute, is the way, there's a reverence for it, right? such as, you know, like the way we have doctors in high esteem. If you're math, you're considered to be very in high esteem in those cultures.
Okay.
Engineering, anything to do with math is really high esteem. In fact, instead of like a, in the Middle Eastern cultures, instead of like doctor, you know, Nassim, the word for it, it's not quite engineer, but it's whatever it is that you are. So you would call them engineer Nassim, the doctor Nassim. And it's a designation. And so you're held in very high esteem in those cultures. And so we don't do that here.
Right.
Among other reasons. And so, of course, your parents are going to, because it's held in high esteem, the parents are going to encourage them to go into those professions. And also, like anywhere else in these third world countries and elsewhere, like in, you know, in India, developing countries, China, etc., they know they're high paying. You know, we need to talk about that. You know, I just got off another phone call here where she's a very high bank executive. She said, you know, you're the first person to talk about how lucrative these careers are. She said, we need to be more vocal about it. I said, yeah, absolutely, we need to be more vocal about it. They get that in those other countries because they're lifting themselves out of poverty, right? So they know that they're high paying. So if we advertise that a little, but not the way that Hollywood has been advertising it, but they, you know, there's something to be said. I'm a perfect example of being lifted out of poverty in one generation. And we don't need to, we shouldn't hide that fact.
Yeah. No, I think that that's critical, especially for women, because I think that, you know, there might be a little bit less of an emphasis on talking about wanting to make money and what that can afford you in your life. But it's not just things, right? It's power, to be able to be independent, to be able to make your own decisions, to have control over those things. And I think that that's something that's often lost in translation to these girls.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And again, I think the industry needs to step up more and get involved in these schools. They have the assets. They have the manpower, woman power. They really want to get into these schools.
So, you know what? We only have about 5 minutes left, but there's something I really wanted to talk about because I think one of the important things about this podcast is not just sharing the story of Rock the Street, but sharing your story, Maura. And it is an exception. And to come from where you came from and to have had a career at Merrill Lynch, a long career where you were often the only woman in the room, it makes you the exception. And I wonder if you can reflect back on what it was that made you, quite frankly, brave enough to go that route that no one else was going.
I'd say a couple things. First of all, I played team sports. And so I knew how to take a face plant and get back up, quite frankly. And I've interviewed a lot of our panelists over the years. And I'll ask by raise of hands, how many of you have played team sports? I can tell you about 90% of us that are in the profession played team sports. So we know failure and we know how to get back up, right? And to take risk, particularly on the investment side, right? We know how to take risks. At least we think we do, right?
Yeah.
That's one thing. The second thing would have to be I had three older brothers. So, of course, I always wanted to do what they did. And of course I wanted to do as well. So I had a fantastic right arm, quite frankly, in softball because my brother was a phenomenal catcher. And so he and I would go out into the street in the Bronx with all the cars. We probably broke a couple windows while we were doing it and throw back and forth. He was getting his catching experience and I was getting my throwing experience. And so I loved team sports and I was probably introduced to team sports and the concept of being on a team through my brothers, who were two of the three of them were pretty active. And I had sharp elbows as a result. When you get to Wall Street, as you well know, Annie, it's very, very male dominated. And so, and approached, and you know, the sexual harassment, galore. And I just had sharp elbows, you know, and I would just say, hey, you know, guys, you know, blow it off, you know, just, you know, and I would just keep going, you know, and just laugh. You had to have a good sense of humor. You shouldn't have to have a good sense of humor. Thankfully, hopefully that's changing. But I would just say, you know, being around three older brothers, you know, it's like, hey, you know, you got nothing over me.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's impressive.
Yeah.
And now in your seat at Rock the Street, you interact with bank executives and big Wall Street executives in a different way and from a different perspective. Do you have a sense of how far it's come and how much easier it has or has not gotten?
The industry?
Yeah.
It's not changed much, I'll tell you that. It's not changed much, and that's why I think it's so important to get these girls earlier and create their own sense of community, and let's keep them together and continue to encourage them. All indication is that not much has yet changed, to be frank. A lot of lip service, a lot of quote initiatives, unquote. But the reality is that the numbers are still just not there yet. And they keep saying the girls aren't there. The women aren't there. The women aren't there. Well, you know what? They're there now. Okay. Yeah. We're getting it.
Yeah.
We're getting it. You know, we've had our vocational career platform, as I said, is the number one and sometimes the number two visited page on our site. And it's not just our students that are coming to it, because we do keep track of who's applying for the jobs. It's also other students from other schools that are applying for these internships. And so, as I said, we're democratizing this, and they have a hunger for this. Unlike perhaps some that are, you know, it again goes to the developing countries and third world countries where they want to live out of it. So there's going to be a better retention rate, I think, with these young women because they want to make something of themselves and they know what poverty is. And so they want to get out of that.
Yeah. It's a powerful motivator.
Yeah, absolutely it is. So I would like to say that some things have changed. And there have. Depends on the sector. It depends on which part of the financial sector you're talking about. Accounting, there's more women. Are they at the senior levels? Not quite. But they're getting more so than the investment side of the house, right? They're still not the portfolio managers that we need them to be. They're still not changing who we invest in to change what we invest in. But I would say the accounting profession has definitely increased in the number of women that are accountants. But again, I don't see them much at the higher levels. And that's where, you know, good intentions go to die. Is middle management enough, right? And so we have to get them more opportunities to be just like, the mediocre white men. And I hate to say that, but they'll tell me that. I mean, I have men telling me that all the time. Not my words, but they've told me. I would like to think, though, that it's going to change, you know, and I think we're a way to that change. I think we've got, I know we have something here, and we're impacting in each of the communities that we're in, we're impacting the talent pipeline.
That's amazing. I think that that's a great place to leave it. I just wanted to thank you for spending the time with us today and for sharing your story, for sharing the story of Rock the Street and letting everyone know that this is a critical problem out there that you're addressing, that there is a solution. I think so many people that are listening are going to want to get involved and are going to be very grateful to know that there is an organization like this that exists so they can get involved. And more than that, Maura, I think your story itself is incredibly inspirational. I think so many of us out there see problems, but think it's too big for me to do something about, or where would I start? And just hearing your journey and the first step you took and what it's led to is just incredibly powerful in and of itself. So thank you for sharing that.
My pleasure. My pleasure, Annie. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I really do appreciate it. And everything that you guys are doing there in your community too.
Great. Thank you so much.